When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Looking for the right road to ride. Well, baby, let's shuffle or step and slide. Yeah.
A rebel child. It's her blonde ambition.
The All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast, a southern storm of bold, liberating rock, shot through with blues, soul, and gospel. And now, your hosts for the show, Brian Jones and Jason Johannes.
Welcome to another episode of the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast, now on, well, has been on Pantheon Podcast for a while. And there you can go to find your most preferred music genre podcast there. With me always is Jason. What's going on, man?
Happy New Year. It is
Happy New Year to you.
The new year again. I think how long should you tell people Happy New Year? Like, what is the right amount of time?
I don't know.
Like 2 weeks into the year, first time
maybe
you see somebody
at the most.
Yeah, at the most. I think so too.
Same time you should be taking down your Christmas decorations.
Yeah. We pulled those out over the weekend. Right on New Year's Eve is typically when we take our Christmas decorations down. My wife gets over it right away and I'm good with it. So off they go. How are you doing, man? You had an awesome live music experience with some of our favorite guests.
I did, yeah. And we talked about it a little bit on the last episode. I got to see the Kentucky Headhunters for the first time. Got to meet Boone, Brother Boone Froggatt as well. Is cool to talk to him. Like, you know, he's just a mellow dude and he's a super quiet kind of guy too. It's just cool, you know.
He's a thinker.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I just we watched most of the show, you know, from the kind of there's an upstairs balcony thing, and then I went down for like the last couple, 2-3 songs, and it was just great. And got to, you know, of course, Richard was kind enough to give my wife and I all access and hung out with him and Fred, you know, in the bus beforehand, and, you know, went back out afterwards hung out a little bit outside the bus, kind of waited for a while and kind of poked their heads in there. And one of their guys, crew guys, whatever, it's like, hey, you know, Richard told us to come back here. Like, oh, okay, come on. He's like, yeah, I just want to make sure, like, I've had to kick a lot of people off this bus.
Oh, I bet. So how'd they sound?
It was awesome. It was just incredible. Yeah. It was, you know, great. You know, other people are saying, you know, like, man, they just get better with age. Yeah. They're incredible. And I love the way Doug Phelps plays the bass too.
Awesome.
Plays that thing like a guitar.
That had to be a really cool experience.
Yeah. For sure.
And thanks to those guys too for getting you access and doing all that. It is always nice. We make a lot of friends through this podcast where people will do stuff like that for us too, you know, give us tickets, give us whatever we need to do. And I'm very thankful that we've made connections that where that happens.
Yeah. They threw me the t-shirt too. So,
man, just,
yeah,
it's a lot of good people out there.
Yep,
you know, a lot
sure,
of good
yeah.
people out there. We love them. And they're from Kentucky.
Yes. They're the from Kentucky. Hunter. We love
and
Kentucky.
We love talking to people from Kentucky.
We're obsessed with Kentucky.
We are. Whether it's musicians.
Well, you know, the Robert Johnson sold his dole. Robert Johnson sold some bread dough. Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil at the crossroads. But I don't know if I believe that because I think the crossroads are actually in Metcalf County. Because there can't be that many great musicians clustered in one place.
That's true. So, I'm going with you on that.
who we talked to, everybody, almost everybody, like a lot of people, Greg and Richard and Boone, and the guys in Mojo Thunder, and it goes on and on. So like, hey man, of course we heard so much about, talking to Boone's Mojo Box, Greg's Cedar Flats pedal, Chris Robertson for Blackstone Cherry, his Dos Fuzz. Who makes these pedals? And there's a company called Analog Pedals, and the guy that does these pedals, his name is Jeff Bolin, another great Kentuckian. So we got to hear all about this stuff, and you guys, guitar players, get ready because you're going to hear some great stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A little bit of how pedals are made, why they're made, and all everything in between, Brian.
Yeah, so you guys kick back and relax and listen to our conversation with Jeff Bolin from Analog Pedals right out of Kentucky. We're here at the guest segment of the podcast. I always throw it to Jason. He's going to introduce our guest today.
And I'm excited to introduce our guest. We got a great guest, somebody from the effects pedal musical instrument side. We don't really get a chance to talk to a lot of guys in that area. So joining us tonight, Jeff Bolin from Analog Pedals. How you doing, Jeff?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
No, you're not in Metcalf County, but you're in a county
No.
adjoining close.
Taylor, yeah.
Taylor.
Edmonton, Glasgow, they're about an hour away. Blackstone Cherry, they're from the Edmonton area. And the Headhunters are from around there too. Greg lives in Glasgow.
We were chatting before how, like, how you hear about Robert Johnson going to, sell his soul to the devil at the crossroads. But I don't believe that story anymore. I think the crossroads are in Metcalf County.
I think
it's
Kentucky Crossroads.
Cedar Flat, Kentucky. It's something in the water there.
Yeah, that's where everybody sold their soul to the
Kentucky
devil to become.
Crossroads even rolls off your tongue better than, Mississippi Crossroads or anything else. Kentucky Crossroads.
Yeah. There's something in the water there in Cedar Flat, man. Lots of good guitar licks. It's
Well, let's kind of start there, because when we talked to Greg and Richard, they mentioned, when they were doing Itchy Brothers, that's being influenced by Buster Brown, and it goes back that far. And I know Greg has talked about, like, there being a scene like in the late 60s in Louisville.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Now Buster Brown, see, there's two parts of Buster Brown. See, there was the Buster Brown in the 70s, and then there's the Buster Brown in the 80s. So the Buster Brown in the 80s is what I'm familiar with.
Right.
And two guys from that Buster Brown actually went on to big bands. The singer, can't remember his name, but he went on the scene with, like, Foreigner. And the drummer, James Kotak, he went on to play with Kingdom Come, Warrant, and then the Scorpions. So, but the 70s Buster Brown, that's what Greg and Richard, who they really pulled a lot of influence from. And they were more of a blues-based, I think,
Yeah,
band.
it seems, that's not uncommon there. For some reason, YNT popped into my head, because if you listen to YNT from the 70s and then the 80s when they're doing Lipstick and Leather and Contagious.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So
Dave Menichetti was in that. Dave Menichetti, fantastic.
Who was the guy that you said sang for Foreigner? Was that in between Lou Gramm and Kelly Hansen? Name.
It was, I'm thinking it was in the 90s at some point, maybe the mid 90s.
Foreigner's had like four or five couple different years. Singers, haven't they?
Yeah. He did a couple of years and then I think they got Lou Gramm back after him.
Okay.
Right. I feel terrible. I can't remember the guy's name, but
come on for not knowing all the Foreigner trivia, Jeff. Come on. How can you talk to us about your guitar pedal, effects pedal shop if you don't know every singer Foreigner?
If you're talking to any of the Kentucky musicians and you don't know these guys, then you know you're band, you know, you're
well, Foreigner's not from Kentucky, are they?
No, but the singer and the drummer, James Kotak, and the singer was from
threw out Kingdom Come. That's a band I haven't heard of in forever, and I really dug their first two albums, and they kind of just disappeared.
Oh yeah, and you know, James Kotak was a huge part of that, which Lenny Wolf, the singer, is, you know, it's his band, but James Kotak was a big part of their success because he was an amazing drummer. You know,
was there anybody else?
The beginning of Get It On, you know?
Yeah.
Pop, pop, pop. I mean, just killer drum riffs.
Everybody always said like Whitesnake was a little bit of Zeppelin-y. I thought Kingdom Come had way more Led Zeppelin than Whitesnake did. And nobody ever really seemed to talk about that. Like I dug it. They weren't aping Zeppelin. And the lead guitar player is playing a Strat, not a Les Paul, but I thought they had a very similar sound.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely.
Was there any other bands like in the mid 80s, like, you know, how every band went to Los Angeles and, you know, coming from just about any state? Is there anybody you know that like went out there and tried to make it, you know, besides, you know, we talked about with Buster Brown? Anybody? I can't think of like, I was a huge metalhead and I used to remember all the bands from whatever state they came from. And I can't think of anybody from Kentucky. I'm sure there's something.
There were several, on the Christian music scene, there was a band called Bride.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
They were from Kentucky. They went out to LA and, you know, they did that whole LA scene and they got pretty big in the Christian market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did. Yeah.
And I, like I said, I'm sure there was many others. I just can't, you know, think. I mean, Kentucky's produced a lot of big name musicians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but a lot of them have just been in bands, you know, that you kind of get lost. But, you know, Kentucky has produced a lot of big national artists. Well, yeah, as well as movie stars, can you know, a lot of the movie stars have come from Kentucky.
Well, Johnny Depp, and then he was in that band Rock City Angels.
But George Clooney, right?
George Clooney. I mean, yeah,
Sturgill Simpson as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Steve Gorman's from Kentucky.
There's been a lot, and the Hunger Games chick, Jennifer.
Oh yeah,
she's from Louisville.
Jennifer Lawrence. Jennifer Lawrence, that's it. Jennifer Lawrence.
The other bands I was here about to get mentioned is Tail Dragger and Super Fuzz.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Love them. You know, Super Fuzz and Dean Smith, the bass player for Rufus Huff, came from Super Fuzz.
Right.
Dean is mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. He's an amazing bass player. I love his style. I love his tone. He's got that, you know, that Ampeg tone, it's right, kind of fuzzy for a bass, you know, it's kind of fuzzy and it just sounds so good, you know. And Dean nails it.
Yeah. And Jared England doing his Black Mountain Prophet records are great.
Mm-hmm. He's a fantastic musician.
Well, Rufus Huff is a great super group of Kentucky musicians.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, their debut album, you know, I mean, there's so many good songs on that. I mean, to me, if it could have ever been picked up by something, a major label or something, I think it could have really done well because there's so many good songs on that one. You know, High on Heaven Hill, 13 Days. There's so many good ones on that debut album. And I hope they keep it up. I hope they can, you know, I know they're just doing shows here and there. I hope they keep it up.
Well, let's Greg like get after it on guitar a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know, he really gets to show his chops.
With the Headhunters, you know, they have a format. The Headhunters have a format. They, you know, Greg come out of the 60s, late 60s with Cream and Hendrix, you know, and he's got so much of that. His style, and with Rufus Huff, he gets to let it go, you know.
When we had Greg and Jared on when they did that reunion gig, and Jared's like, yeah, those kids from Otis used to follow us all around.
Well, another they Kentucky did. Band, Boone, you know, another Kentucky guy.
Yeah. What can I say? What I love about Boone, I love his voice. He's got some great licks, you know.
Yeah, he does.
But I love Boone's voice. To me,
oh God,
Boone has a soulful, you know, it's what could I compare it to? I mean, Aretha Franklin, you know, or something, you know, packed full of soul. And
he's
I love that.
He's one of those people that you look at him and then you hear him singing, you're like, that voice is coming out of that guy?
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Or, you know, like, holy shit.
And I always tell him, you know, which they've had so many, but that John Brim tribute is my favorite that Otis did. And Troubled Times, golly, man, I listen to that. I feel it. You know, I can feel that song. He's so soulful.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
So how does this all start? I mean, I'm assuming you're a guitar player. How do you get into what leads to you going, hey, I'm going to make my own pedals? And how do you do that?
Started in like 2018. Let me start before that. I play in an AC/DC tribute band. I'm the Angus in an AC/DC tribute band.
Okay, cool.
I had a side project, you know, just we jammed in my basement. And my best friend was playing guitar with me, and he had a Klon Centaur, a real Klon Centaur, that he had, you know, he had ordered. He had, you know, called the dude on the phone and you know, and it was like $299, I think, is what he paid for it. And I love that boost that he got with it, you know, because he stacked it. And so he ran it after an overdrive. And when he would want his, you know, he would turn the gain off and use the volume. But when he boosted it, man, it was just an explosion. And I love that. I want it. But, you know, at that point in time, when he was playing with us, you know, they were already $3,000 for a Klon. You know, and I was like, You know, so I was like, I'll make one. And that was it. I made it and it didn't work. So I started on something simpler. I did a little fuzz pedal and progressed from there.
How do you know how to make a pedal? What is your background?
YouTube.
You know, hey, here's some circuit chip and some capacitors and, you know, whatever. I'm just gonna solder everything together.
It was a lot of watching videos, learning how to etch circuit boards. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a whole process of that, etching a circuit board and just getting everything just right. And, you know, so it starts out, I was etching common circuits, you know, tube drivers and things like that. But then I really started researching. I started messing with other software programs. And then I met a good friend in Louisville, Clint Fackler. He owns a company called Fackler FX. And he's an engineer. And so me and him really got, you know, talking, and he helped me a lot. You know, so he showed me a lot how to, you know, the circuits. And now it's, we toss ideas back and forth to each other until we come up with something. And, you know, so things like the Dose Fuzz, my Sugar Buzz Fuzz, the even the Cedar Flat Lightning is all with that. And with Clint Fackler helped me out a lot.
As a guitar player, were you a guy that would mess around with gear, whether you're taking apart an amp, taking apart pedals, try to kind of screw around with stuff?
Well,
naturally curious about the electronics and things that go into your instrument.
Yes. I've always been a tinker.
Yeah. That's the word I was looking for. Tinker. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
And you know, I remember, and it's still kind of, I kick myself, but years ago I had an original ADA flanger, and those are, if you know, those are like the creme de la creme of flangers. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was original 70s ADA. And anyways, I was in my late teens and I had it, and I was taking it apart. I was going to try to clean it up. I had to get a bar, and I think a pot broke off, and a mm-hmm. potentiometer, and I couldn't get it back. I give it to a friend. He wound up losing it. So I was like, and now, you know, because ADA flangers are really expensive and kind of hard to find. But I did finally get another one. I do have another one. But yeah, I've always been a tinker to take stuff apart. Not all the time be able to get it put back together, but, you know. And guitars are, you know, taking them apart, trying different things, different pickups, different tuner machines, you know, different bridges.
It's a little Eddie Van Halen-ish too, you know, with trying to he did this Frankenstein, right? What works here? What gets the sound I'm looking for? And try a bunch of crazy stuff.
I think it's really, you're tinkering, you know, out of necessity, because sometimes you can't get things on guitars. Like, you know, I'm obsessed with the Vega trims, tremolo systems. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't put those on Strats, and they don't put them on any other, you know, you have to buy those separate. So it's like, you know, my Hendrix Strat, I got a Vega trim and put it on. It's super simple to put on, but it's that out of necessity, because Fender doesn't have a model with a Vega trim, you know. Pickups. Sometimes, you know, I get a guitar and I'm not crazy about the pickups, and, you know, put something in it that I know I like. I've got a Charvel Tele, and then I put the DiMarzio Evolution pickups in. That one right there, you probably can't see them, but
it's, yeah, so dark. Are those active pickups?
No. Now, okay. The pickups that came in this are active, active, and I hated them, you know.
Yeah.
Because I'm the kind of guitar. I plug a guitar in, I just leave it plugged in, and you run the battery down. You know,
Yep.
active electronics. And so, yeah. So I had to take all that out, and I put the DiMarzios in.
Unless you're doing like really crazy metal or stuff like that, you really don't need active pickups.
No, they're a little bit too hot for me.
Is there any way you can?
I said 9 volts are expensive.
They are. Yep.
Is there any way you can explain, like, in layman terms? Like, I wonder, like, what kind of wiring and stuff, whatever, inside these pedals make the different sounds? Like, what makes a delay? What makes a flanger? What makes a fuzz? What, you know? I mean, is there any way to kind
that's
of
a,
like?
That's a good question, Brian. That was on my list, so that's a good one.
For like overdrives and distortion pedals, a lot of it has to do with the diodes, the transistors. But, you know, sometimes it's, you know, they get their overdrive and everything from like chips, ICs. Now, when you get to things like modulation, you get more into the IC, the chips.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of those, like, back in the day, you know, chips were more analog. They were bucket brigade chips. And those started getting phased out. And you started using more digital chips.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of modulation pedals, flangers, phasers, delays, echoes, use those chips, those digital chips. But like I said, with overdrives, distortions, it's more of transistors, like the Klon Centaur. They've got those particular diodes, you know, that Bill Finnegan had, you know, the magical diodes. But yeah, that's a lot of the guts of what makes, you know, like a distortion pedal, or a modulation pedal, you know, that.
Are you like a historian when it comes into pedals, like how they first came out? One thing I do know is, like, I have a Satisfaction fuzz, and that was obviously from this, you know, Keith Richards, that song. And apparently, like, he was using one of the first fuzz pedals. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I'm just wondering if you dig into the history of pedals.
Keith, yeah, the Satisfaction. That was some of the first fuzz that you know, got recorded. And if you notice, I mean, it's a real nasty sound of fuzz. Bright, you know, it's like a lot of fuzz you hear. And from like when Hendrix came out in the later 60s and was recording, his fuzz had more body to it. It had more bottom end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that Keith Richards fuzz, that was real raspy, high-end fuzz. No, but as far as historian, no, I'm really not, you know. I just kind of do what I know. And and like I said, my buddy Clint, he taught me a lot about it. I'm no engineer by no means, you know. But I've been playing guitar for 42 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I almost wonder too is, you know, do you have to almost be electrical engineer to look the pedal? Because you're saying, hey, there's all these components, but there's got to be a series, you know, circuits designed to them to be able to do that. So do you just replicate what you're seeing on YouTube or the internet? Or are you consulting with your friend? Because I would figure some kind of electrical engineering be helpful. Well,
honestly, if you think about it, there hasn't, as far as original overdrives or original distortions, I mean,
basic templates out there, and you kind of follow them with a little bit of change.
I mean, really, the Klon Centaur was probably the last really real original. I mean, everything, I ain't gonna say everything, but a lot of pedals were taken off of like the Tube Screamer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not, what am I saying? It's like just reinventing the wheel.
Well, there's only so many things that you can do. I think it's what you're telling them, right? There's a specific pattern, design recipe. You could do a couple little tweaks to it, but it's relatively the same.
Now, I will say, you know, Brian Wampler, his pinnacle pedal, that was pretty darn original. You know, he didn't use any chips in his pedal, and that pedal was all transistor based J201s. And I have a similar pedal that I base it off of that, you know, and it's my Kentucky Hot Brown. And that's what I use. I swear by that pedal. You know, it's an amazing overdrive.
And Jeff, we know how you got your start a little bit trying to build this clone pedal for one of your buddies, but what, you know, now you've got this business with even signature pedals. What made you feel or want to even go into kind of doing this as a business?
Well, when I think some of it was when I think Steve Jewell was the first one to contact me and asked me to make him a pedal.
So why did he contact you though? Like who sent him off in your direction and why?
I started it, you know, because I built my website. I'd started just to, and I wasn't selling much, you know.
It's like built to order stuff. It's like, hey, you get an order in, you're putting it together. It's not like you have inventory. Yeah.
And like I said, I had Steve on my friends list on Facebook because I've been a huge Otis fan for years. And so Steve contacted me, asking me if he had, you know, if I could make him a Univibe clone. I did, you know, I made that his Univibe. I mean, he's like, can we do a deal, signature deal, you know? And this was when Steve Jewell was still in Otis. So we did the Univibe clone for him, made it his signature pedal. And then Boone. They had Boone's Mojo Box, came out with that. And then that's when Chris Robertson contacted me and was wanting me to do a pedal for him. And that's when it just exploded. You know, it just took off. I started selling them things all over the world, you know, literally all over the world.
All word of mouth through the musicians and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, hey, Steve, someone's going up to Steve, like your box or, you know, Boone's and saying, hey, what is that? Where'd you get that?
Yeah. And like I said, I probably did a couple of videos of some of my pedals and they saw them, you know, and I said it, that's when it took off. When Chris made his pedal and he made that little video he made, it just exploded. Yeah.
Well, Blackstone Cherry, you know, the very, you know, along with Headhunters, you know, most well-known bands in Kentucky, arguably. So I can understand where once it got into Blackstone Cherry land,
what's crazy is, you know, here in the U.S., Blackstone, which they're huge here. I mean, don't get me wrong, but like in England, in the UK, they're like Led Zeppelin. I mean, they're massive.
Yeah. Yep.
Over in the UK, you know,
which is so a shame. A lot of mid-level bands are like that in the UK. Like we talked to a lot of artists that, but man, they kill it in the UK.
Yeah. Yeah. I said, and that's where I sold most of my pedals to, was in the UK. It was amazing.
Interesting. Just because I made a lot of Blackstone friends. Cherry. Yeah, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. This past year, we sent one to Lee Anderton from Anderton's.
Anderton's, the big music shop over there. I watch their videos all the time.
He made a little video with it, with the Dose Fuzz.
Are they selling them for you over there, or they're just testing them out?
No, I just sent him one. He asked me to send him a price list, and I'm sorry, Lee. I haven't done it yet.
Come on, Lee. Jeff's got a business to run.
No, it's not him. It's me. I've just, it caught me right in the middle as I was moving. I moved this past year into a new house where I've got a bigger shop. And, you know, it kind of caught me at a really bad time. But I'm eventually, I will get him a price list, you know. And I've tried to do things like instead of etching my circuit boards myself, I've kind of priced around it how much it would cost to get them made. And it's expensive. It's really expensive. So I don't know. We'll have to see how the company progresses.
Was the Greg Cedar Flats pedal, was that like the most recent signature that you did?
It's based off of the Echoplex preamp. Now, Dunlop is already, you know, they've made the Echoplex preamp pedal. You know, Greg wanted his to be more like the EP4, which the EP4 Echoplex had a tone stack or a tone section. And so he wanted that on his. So it's basically like an EP3 with a preamp with a tone potentiometer on it. It's really good. I mean, you know, there's certain players out there like Rick Willis from Marshall Tucker Band can't play without it. He this past year he was playing and I guess it went down, something happened, and he was panic, you know, he panicked. So I got him, I like overnighted him another one, you know. But it's more, Greg's pedal's more of a let's say a tone shaping pedal that it gives you a little bit of a boost, but is it it's a it you know you plug it in. I mean, I use Marshall Origin 50s, which is, you know, without anything is a very kind of a dry, you know, you put that in, it just makes it so crisp, you know. It's just it's a very, I don't know what the tone shape it does on an EQ, but it just makes it real crisp and full.
So you're kind of telling us there, like what Greg's pedal does, you know. So can you kind of brief, you know, Boone did a demo of his Mojo box, but you can talk about like what his pedal does specifically, and then Steve, and then Chris.
Like I said, Greg's just makes everything really crisp and it cleans out, you know, it's a very nice pedal.
Where do you put that in the chain, though? Is that like in
Last.
last? Okay.
I mean, of course, everything is, you can put
Because you want all the
wherever, but
signals to go through that to shape them to your point,
yeah.
right? Okay.
Well, you know, and my thing was, you know, when guys used Echoplexes, they would always put the Echoplex at the very end of the chain. You know, and that's where that preamp would sit.
That's
So
the
I said,
final sound going into the amp, and yeah.
so that's what I tell people. I said, just, you know, set it at the end. It's one of them things you just leave on, you know.
Yeah.
You don't kick it on and on, you just leave it on.
Just leave it on.
Does that work as a, like a noise gate as well?
No.
No? Okay.
No. It's a preamp. It's just I can't, it's
It's
hard to
like a little
explain.
boost going to the amp, right? It gives that
It's a
final
little
touch up of all
boost,
the
a very
sound.
little boost. Yeah, because see, when me and Greg talked about this, you know, I'm thinking I gotta be really careful because this is Greg Martin. Greg Martin's tone is legendary. I don't wanna screw that up. You know what I'm saying? I wanna give something that he's gonna be proud of and he's gonna be proud to put his name on. So that's what we talked about it. We had some long talks back and forth. Had, you know, I made several prototypes and sent them to him, and we settled on it. So Boone's Mojo Box, that one is it's a two-in-one pedal. The first side's a chorus, and the second is a tremolo, and all of it's analog. Chris's pedal, that's another two-in-one pedal. It's a Jimi Hendrix Fuzz Face style pedal and an Ampeg scrambler. You can switch with his. You have to. You can switch back and forth. you can't use them together. Like Boone's pedal, you can use the effects together. But with the Chris's Dose Fuzz, you can only use either or the Ampeg Scrambler or the Fuzz Face. And it's really, you know, it's a great, great pedal.
What does a scrambler do?
It's an octave fuzz. It's an octave up fuzz. So if you ever listen to any of the old Cactus albums, their guitar player used the scrambler a lot. It's kind of a raspy, but it's an octave up fuzz. And what you do is you put the guitar on the neck pickup, and you roll your tone volume off. And that's when, you know, up around, when you get around the octave, octave E, in that area, that, you know, it's when you start noticing that the unique. Oh, okay. And picture the solo in Purple Haze. That's Hendrix used an octaver, but it's the same thing.
Interesting. Roll off the tone and then you hit
that. Yeah, you put it on the neck pickup, you roll off the tone, and you get that octave up fuzz.
That's kind of what Clapton did without the octave change on Sunshine of Your Love, right? He rolled the whole tone off pretty much on that, and I don't know if he played at the neck pickup or not, but that's like, I don't want to call it a flat sound, but that really muted, underwatery sound almost.
Yeah. Well, you know, Clapton, especially that Sunshine of Your Love solo, to me, when you do that, when you roll that tone off, it gets real buttery, you know, especially when you put it on the neck pickup. That's when I say it's real buttery. and I love that tone.
But it's unique.
Very. Yeah. Oh my gosh, Clapton, you know, he's amazing.
Is that one of your guys?
One of my guys. He's one of my big influences. Absolutely. Cream. I mean, it was just amazing.
My beef with Clapton is he could never keep a band together for very long.
Yeah. Who knows?
Who knows? He's super talented.
He had a lot
but
of
like
substance abuse issues back in the 70s. So it could be, you know.
So now with your pedals, is it all or just mostly like, you know, signature custom pedals? Is there anything talking about going into like a mass production or
right now? I mean, well, I still do Boone's, which, but you know, Chris and Greg's, but no, I've got, like I said, my Kentucky Hot Brown, which I swear by, but I've got my Super Sugar Buzz Fuzz, which is a germanium fuzz pedal. It's based off of a tone bender circuit. I can't even remember.
What says your bestseller is your Greg Martin
Vibe,
Cedar Flat
my
Lightning.
Vibe pedal. Mm-hmm.
Your Vibe. Oh, okay. The Vibe. Yep.
The
that's
Vibe
a single.
Pedal. Yeah, it's a single pedal. As I said, originally I made it for Steve when he was in Otis, but since he's moved on to Blackstone Cherry, I've kind of just took it back to just not being a signature pedal.
Got an XS overdrive pedal.
The XS. That's my Klon clone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So can you explain like the Kentucky Hot Brown and then the Sugar Fuzz?
Okay. The Kentucky Hot Brown, like I said, I kind of based it off of the Wampler Pinnacle. So it's a transistor based distortion. You know, and it's transistors have more of a tube like sound to them. And this one has, you know, basically six cascading J202s, is what I use. He used the J201 transistor, I used the J202 transistors, but it's six cascading transistors, and you get, you know, such an amazing tube-like sound. You get that, it gives you that warm brown sound, that Eddie Van Halen tone. That's why I call it the Kentucky Hot Brown. The Sugar Buzz Fuzz is, like I said, is a germanium tone bender style fuzz pedal, and it's very, you know, it's a simple circuit, sounds really nice. What else? Yeah. The XS Overdrive. Okay, so that's my Klon clone. I use some Russian D9E diodes. Those are my secret diodes, you know. But, you know, since JHS and Josh, they've come out with the build your own Klon now. That's kind of hurt everybody, every Klon clone builder, you know.
Well, you this is my question, just a statement, but you kind of see those build your own pedal kits everywhere where some very basic stuff. Is that, I mean, is that really, are those any
That's
good?
Great to start out with.
Yeah.
Like just I said, to figure out the my basics. My first Klon clone that, you know, I tried to build and failed. It was a kit.
Yeah.
You know?
Like Sumac, they sell those, or like, I think you can go to Sweetwater and they've got some stuff online.
I think I got mine from Amazon. It was just
Chinese. I've seen them on Amazon. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I said, but after I did that one and it failed, I went to another one that was I built a point-to-point buzz pedal. And
what does that mean? What does point-to-point mean?
Point-to-point is you don't have a circuit board with traces. You have what's called a turret board. And so instead of the circuit board with the traces, and you, mm-hmm. this is, you have to link all your components together to make the circuit.
Got it.
So in the, you know, like in the late 60s, when you had your Marshall point to points, they used turret boards, these big turret boards in the point to point Marshalls. And the, I think it was the 73, 74, they started with the circuit boards on Marshalls, you know. But yeah, so that's the thing is, I don't really know if there's any difference in tone. I guess some people that are into collecting vintage pedals probably will say there's tone, but it's more of the components that would have a tonal difference, because back then the components back then in the 60s were really not in spec, you know? And so today's components are more in spec, so there's going to be your tonal difference,
plus probably more consistency with the sound and the build and everything too. Yeah.
Yes,
you kind of know what you're getting, but that takes away some of the fun too, because, you know, you, just like with guitars, you might get something that just sounds great even though there was a 50 others made that day.
Exactly.
Or sound bad.
Exactly. I mean, that's the old story of Hendrix, when he would pick a wah pedal, he had to go through 20 of them to pick one he liked.
But for you doing an independent business and all that, it's probably nicer for you to be able to trust and get a consistent sound with your components.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The tolerance level components nowadays has gotten, you know, they've narrowed the margin and it's gotten really tight. But yeah.
So when a player, a musician comes to you and wants a custom pedal, what are the important questions that you need to ask them or they need to answer for you?
Yeah, good question. You know, what are you looking for? You know, and I try to tell them, you know, do you have any particular pedal in mind that you want to shoot for?
Yeah.
You know, and then I kind of look for the schematics, and then we go from there. And some people have brought me some wild ideas, you know, to have, you know, like I said, the 2-in-1 pedals. I think the craziest one was having a distortion pedal and a phaser, you know, in the same pedal. And that gave me a great idea, but, you know, to do like the Eddie Van Halen, you could have that in one pedal, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. And add a flanger to it. And there you go.
Yeah. But that's a thing, you know, is what are they looking for? And, you know, can you give me a pedal that you want to base it off of?
Jeff, do you have like sound demos of your pedals on your website?
I used to have some videos. I need to make a video page. There was some videos of Chris demonstrating the Dose Fuzz. I'll put that back up.
Going back around to the custom pedals, though, so if you get your initial build, are you sending it back to the artist for them to test out, give you notes on, get back to tweak it? Like, how does the fine tuning go?
That's exactly what we do. Prototypes. Chris Roberts's prototype, we pretty much nailed it from the get-go. I sent him a couple of prototypes. Greg's pedal, I sent him probably two or three prototypes until we nail it down. They, you know, I sent it to them. They send me notes on, you know, what needs to be done, and we make the changes. Yeah.
Brian, what I'm thinking, stay with me here. The All Things Blues and Southern Rock pedal. There's a blues setting and a Southern Rock setting on it. Jeff, what do you think? What would we do? What would be the blues sound? Would be like a blues driver almost sound? And what would be the Southern Rock sound? Help us out here. What would we do?
Southern Rock. That, you know, I think that would be more your Tube Screamer.
Yeah.
Kind of sound. Get that Lynyrd Skynyrd kind of Allman Brothers 38 Special kind of Southern Rock sound. I think a Tube Screamer would be good. And the Blues Driver, that's a great choice right there.
Yeah.
Fantastic pedal.
Jeff, we're going to have to talk after the podcast to figure this thing out.
Let's do it.
I would use it in my playing. That's all I know. And it would work. And it just works very well. Got a blues setting, the Southern Rock setting. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Well, you know, bands like Lynyrd Skynyrd, I don't know what their pedal boards consisted of. I know that they used, like, back in the day, they used like PV amps. They use like a PV Mace, I think was the model. And that's crazy to think, you know, those guys, big as they were, they probably have any amp in the world. They probably could have had any Marshall in the world. They were using PV, you know.
Those are more, were known for more like hard rock and metal for a little bit too, and they're very inexpensive.
Yeah. Well, you know, they were the working man's amp.
Yeah.
Is what it came to in the 70s and the 80s. It was the working man's amp. If you couldn't afford a Marshall, you know, you could afford a PV. And then Eddie Van Halen got a hold of them and did the 5150, and you know, that was massive.
And there the 80s hard rock metal market really took a shine to PV.
Absolutely. That whole 90s scene, the Alice in Chains and all that 90s grunge, they took to the PV 5150 a lot, big time.
Michael Anthony, I think he's got a signature amp with them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's into, like, hot sauces, so it's probably something. Matt Anthony's Cafe, I think, is what it is.
He does. He has his hot sauces. Does he do barbecue sauce or just hot sauces?
I think he's doing barbecue sauce now, too.
I thought so, too. Yeah.
So I just saw a little short video of him the other day. I think he's making he's making something with some barbecue sauce.
Yeah.
And Sammy's got tequila, and Michael Anthony has barbecue sauce and hot sauce. What a combination.
Oh, David. Sammy Hagar hit pay dirt with that tequila, man.
Oh, he did. I've got some at my house.
David Ellison from Megadeth, he worked for PB for a while, too.
Did he?
Yeah, when he was out of Megadeth the first time.
That's, you know, that's cool. And you know, which I'm not so much of a metal guy. I did go through a phase in my teenage years where I listened to, you know, Metallica, Megadeth. So Yeah, around the Peace Sells, you know, but who's buying era.
That would be a great pedal too. The Peace Sells, like, you know, drive or metal drive. Like that would I can just that would be cool, man. That would be super cool.
You're giving me ideas here. Keep them
it
coming.
It would be
man.
two. The Peace Sells, but who's buying? So the Peace Sells would be like, you know, the more clean, and the who's buying would be like the big distortion.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
Dave. Mustaine, if you're listening,
deal with Dave Mustaine there, you know.
Dave, if you're listening, we know you love our podcast. Get a hold of Jeff. Get a hold of Jeff. We're going to do this. It would be such a cool design, too. It would be such a cool design, like, because it would be like that album cover or something. It'd be so cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Dave's a big, big into Gibson now. He's got the Gibson Vs.
Yeah, he's got all those signature models. I think both the Gibson and Epiphone offers one each for him. Yeah, like the V's. Yeah,
yeah, and then Kramer as well because they Gibson.
They're all owned by Gibson now. Right. Yeah,
yeah, I think Kramer did a model. Cool. Yeah, it's awesome. Man, I haven't played a Kramer in years. I think when Music Yo had bought them, I'd bought one of the Berettas and it was junk, you know.
I bought a Beretta special off of Sweetwater like 2 years ago when I think they had a sale. It was either $159 or $179. I had a $50 gift card. Yeah. I bought it for intentionally you know, doing stuff to it. So I put a whole different pickup in it, tuners, bridge, nut, you name it. And it's actually it's not bad. A new volume pop because the other one was basically, it was either one or 10. There's nothing in between. And, you know, it's kind of taught me a little bit how to do some of my own replacement work. I've done tuning keys and some other stuff before, but never, you know, to the extent of really replacing everything on it.
I've thought about doing exactly what you did.
Because it's so cheap, man. It was such a cheap guitar. And I'm like, if I fuck it up, then it doesn't really matter. I'm really not out that much money.
I almost bought a Focus, but I just kind of got spooked out from reviews and any of the frets are real sharp and the tuning peg was like hardly move on the bottom string.
That's awesome.
Yeah, this is like a hot paint one.
Heck yeah.
Seymour Duncan, like super distortion kind of pedal pickup and new tone knob, new bridge and trim.
How's the neck on that? It's
actually really good, man. No, it's like it's pretty fast and smooth. The frets were surprisingly good. There's like no fret splay, like it's not sharp. They were level in good I didn't have to do crap to the neck or the frets at all. I was very surprised. It's nice. It doesn't grab your hand at all. It's very slick and smooth.
Yeah. Awesome.
So again, like I probably put $200 into this. I bought it for just over $100. And you know, then when people send me stickers, I put the stickers on it. Leilani Kilgore, Dead Dads, Junkyard.
I need to send you an analog sticker.
Yeah. I'll slap it on there. Look, I even got a Mule hot sauce because Brian and I use Sticker Mule for all of our merch, and they send. So speaking of Michael Anthony,
awesome.
Yeah. Do you have like preferred guitars, Jeff? Preferred amps?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, I've got several guitars. I've got a 2015 Les Paul Standard.
What's the kind of top do you have on that?
It's a quilted or not a quilted. It's a flame. It's
tobacco, bourbon, iced tea. Are you going to show it to me? Oh, go get it.
I'll show it to you. Hang on.
Go get it. Oh, please do. For all of you at home who can't see any of this stuff because we're an audio format only, we'll explain it to you the best that we can. And sorry.
All right, so
we got a couple. Is that an Explorer? Explorer?
Yeah. So this is my 2015.
Also, it's like a Cherry Heritage Cherry Burst.
It's got a crazy flame.
Oh, look at the Brian. Can you see all that?
Yeah, I can see that. Yep.
Yeah, and it's the 100th anniversary. Of the Les Paul. So it's a chambered body, and it sounds amazing. Really does. People
it's like a 60 style neck on that one, right? A little thinner neck.
Well, yeah. It's crazy. It's got a crazy. It's a thin. It's kind of thin.
Yeah, I see it.
Wide.
Yeah.
Thin and wide. You know, and I took the robo tuners off.
You took the robo. Yeah.
And put locking tuners on it.
Yep. Good choice there. That's a great top, though. That's beautiful.
And yeah, my 1990 Explorer.
Oh, look at that thing. Black with a white pick card.
When I got this, it had EMGs in it. And they had really done some
crazy. Somebody's playing some Megadeth toggle on that. Yeah.
They put the toggle here. And I when I got it, I was like, put it back to the way it's supposed to be.
that is awesome too. How does that thing play?
Oh, it plays amazing. I don't know. Yeah, you got to play some Scorpions riff on it when you get it.
Yeah, you do, man.
It's great.
The Explorers are making a comeback, Brian. Have you seen that? Like Ace Vaughn Johnson got one from LA Guns, from Gibson. Like you're seeing more and more people. Actually, even the Explorer models come out now are kind of a thing again.
Now I've got two SGs. I've got a.
Well, if you're an AC/DC cover band, you have to have the SG.
I've got a 1987 62 reissue. That's my baby, you know.
Red?
Yeah. And then I've got a 2021 22 Ebony 61 reissue. I keep going back to the 62 reissue though. It's not bad. I've had it for so long. It's beat all to heck.
Did that 62 reissue have a trim bar on it or everything?
No.
Okay.
No, it's just the regular Gibson bridge. But the neck on it is very different from your regular SGs. Because if you remember back in the 80s, the SGs, those mid 80s SGs, they were advertised as having the fastest neck, you know. And so that's it's a thin profile, wide neck, you know. And my Explorer is a lot that same way. The 61 reissues have a little bit more chunk to them, you know. And the regular standards have a lot of chunk. There's got a big fat neck on them.
How about amps?
Oh, amps. Good question.
I've got a JCM 800 50 watt. That's a 1989 model. And I've got a 50 watt Origin that I just bought this past year. And I've actually replaced my 800 with it because it just sounds like AC/DC.
Have you ever been to Electric Lazy Land?
I have. And you know, I've got to play on old Hank Plank, you know, ain't nothing like it.
I'm trying to wonder what the rest of that room looks like because we just get like, you know, he's always got like all the Germino and Marshall Plexi heads behind him.
And Marshall heads stacked up and it's his basement. It's a cool room. And he keeps his cabinet in the garage. So whenever he's practicing he cranks it, you know, and so it's not blowing, you know, everybody away, but, it's cool.
Jeff, on your pedals, do they generally work better with like a humbucker pass style pickup single coil or does it not matter?
It doesn't really matter. I think, you know, because I mean, I play my Hendrix Strat through them and I, you know, of course, you know, the single coils are going to be underpowered, but you know, it still, it has a great tone. And to me, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, certain guitar players out there that are, you know, swear by either single coils or swear by double coils. It's just teach his own, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I just, you know, a lot of the players that I think you've worked with are all really humbucker style players more so. And then you brought out your Les Paul and your Explorer also humbuckers, but I did hear you talk about your Strat before. So what do you predominantly use with your Strat, like in terms of your pedals? Same thing, hot round?
The Vibe. I like my Univibe and Fuzz.
Fuzz would work really well with the coil. Yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, I mean, I said Hendrix was probably my first guitar hero.
Yeah,
and so I've got a lot of that influence in me, you know, and that's when I, you know, when I pick up that guitar, I obviously kind of gravitate to that blues, you know. And when I pick up the SG, I gravitate towards the AC/DC.
You can't pick up an SG without playing an AC/DC lick.
That's right.
Within the first 30
Highway
seconds.
To Hell. You gotta pick out Highway.
Yeah. That's how you try it out. That's the only way.
No, it's funny you mentioned that Electric Lazy. I remember the last time I was at Greg's, you know, his wife Ruth, sweet lady, her favorite AC/DC song is Thunderstruck, you know, and so every time he says every time that comes on, she makes him crank it up. So he had me play it
for so I got a Thunderstruck question for you. Do you on Thunderstruck, are you hammering on and pulling off, or are you picking everything every time?
I hammer on and pull off. I'm not the cleanest picker in the world.
Because I've seen it both ways, and I've heard Angus actually plays it by picking everything. But if he try to play it, I hammer on, pull off. He does. Yeah. He picks that.
He picks every note.
That's hell. Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine, you know, because in the recorded song, it's almost all the way through the song.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he must have had the worst monkey palate.
Just permanently right hand, like curled over. Yeah.
But no, I'm not the cleanest picker in the world. I hammer on and pull off. I cheat.
I think it sounds better hammer on and pull off, be honest with you.
Yeah. I've tried it a couple of times in practice, and I can get close, but I'm just like,
I can't get the timing down doing that. I can get the timing down better than hammer on pulling off, right? Because it's like, you know, half the pick. Yeah. I think it's because I'm a shitty guitar player, honestly.
Me too.
I'm just going the lazy route.
I play AC/DC. You know, it's all the same song.
But it sounds simple, but it's not. And you know what I mean? Like that is, it sounds like it, but until you start playing it, you can't
replicate
it. It's
not as easy as it sounds.
It's not. It is. Yeah.
I've been doing it for 20 years. My band, this is our 20th year of doing the AC/DC tribute. And I love it. I love doing it. You know, we're not huge. There's some of these tribute acts now that are massive. I mean, honestly, they play better venues than national bands play.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
We're not that big. You know, we still play clubs and we've got to do three sets. And believe me, I know sitting through three sets of AC/DC's, you know, to a person that's not into it is probably painful. We have diehard fans that follow us around.
They're the only band that can get away with hitting on the same record and still being cool and badass.
Exactly.
Hell yeah.
Exactly.
That last record they put out was really, really good. And I was listening to it while I was working out for like at least a month. I was surprised.
Yeah. Oh, it's a bit, but it's not. I'm not down on them. I thought it was a great album. It was a great try, but it's, you know, it's not like it used to be, you know.
Sure.
They've matured, and you know, not having Mutt Lange in there to produce their albums anymore. I mean, because you look at, you know, Highway to Hell and Back in Black, their biggest albums.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
And those were both Mutt Lange. And then after Mutt Lange stopped doing that. After
Lester,
they started getting
Def Leppard,
their brother George doing, it was different. You know, it was just, they were good songs, great songs. It was just different, you know?
Yeah. They weren't so blatantly like sexual.
Right.
What percentage of AC/DC songs would you say aren't about sex?
Oh.
10? 20?
I don't know. It's hard to say. It's either
they're all either direct or euphemisms.
It's either about sex or hell, you know.
Yeah, right. Sometimes it's the same thing.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's that's, you know, yeah, they do, you know, they're sneaky about the way they slip that stuff in, but
sneaky and smart, like intelligent, yeah, about it. You know what I mean? They're, yeah, very, we'll use a British slang. They're very cheeky about it.
Cheeky. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good word there.
Yeah. Jason, is it that time of the show?
Jeff, are you ready for some stupid questions?
Let's do it.
All right. All right. Good. All right. We'll keep them mostly gear related for, you know, for you, but we'll throw a couple curveballs at you at the same time. All right. What is the best pedal that you've ever owned?
My Kentucky Hot Brown.
Oh, nice. I like it going with your own. What is the worst pedal you've ever owned?
Oh, I had a Dan Electro, one of them backwards, a back talker. I think it was, that was horrible.
Yeah. Didn't sound good. Didn't work well. Cheap construction. What do we got?
Yeah. All of the above.
Just everything. What's one pedal that you wish you had if money were no object?
Oh, man. Ooh, probably a Klon Centaur.
Nice. Yeah. If you could perfectly replicate or clone any pedal, what's the one you would go with?
The BK Butler tube driver.
Why that one?
It's of course it uses a real tube. The overdrive is organic. Really nice toneful pedal.
Nice. If you had to play for one gig or one time on stage, a guitar, an amp with one pedal, what's your setup?
Good question. Probably my Explorer, my Hot Brown, and my Origin.
Cover a lot of sounds with that.
Yeah.
I just lost track of what I was going to ask you. It was a really good question too, unfortunately. Is it better to own an expensive guitar and a cheap amp, or a expensive amp and a cheap guitar? Or does it not matter? It's all on the player.
I would say it's all on the player. You know, you could give Greg Martin a plastic guitar and a toy amp and he would make it sound great. You know, and Eddie Van Halen would be the same. You know, you right. give him.
It's all in the fingers.
It's all in the fingers. He could make junk sound like, you know, the best room in the world.
What is the best guitar? What is the best pedal to cover up if you're a crappy sounding guitar player? Hold on, let me grab my pen and paper.
Yeah, right?
It's not for Brian and I. It's for everybody else.
My Kentucky Hot Brown.
All right, every Kentucky Hot Brown it is. Brian, I think I'm going to be making an online purchase after this show. Are you a guy who's a purist in terms of amps where you have to have a tube amp, or are you okay with solid states?
I prefer tube amps.
Prefer tube apps. Are you anti-solid state? You prefer tube? Are you okay with solid state amps?
I've played some solid, like the Katanas, the Boss Katanas.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Have a lot amps.
Yeah. I do have a Boss Katana 50K2, whatever, as a practice amp because I can plug in a bunch of stuff using my headphones.
That's right.
But I use Orange on stage.
Built in effects.
Yeah.
fantastic. Yeah.
But it's not, doesn't go live or in the studio right with me.
And that's
and you can plug in your phone or a tablet too to program it or play along with stuff. It's really, it's pretty helpful.
I got a follow-up question on that. Like, what's you guys feeling on that? Like, to me, like I just got this Orange and I had a Nuex before and I get distracted and kind of lost and in the forest with all that, you know, stuff you can use with apps. And
I prefer to keep it simple. I really do.
You can do a lot with your mid range and high settings and tone and volume.
But, you know, to me, the perfect foundation, for anything, you got to have a good amp. To me, that's a good tube amp, and not knocking solid state, not knocking the digital processors that are out now. You know, they're all incredible. A good foundation is where you want to start, and then go from there, build from that.
Brian, when I'm testing out like a new amp, what I do is I'll take the low, mid, and high, and I'll turn them all the way to the right, and then I'll start dialing stuff back a little bit just to try to bring stuff down and get the sound I want a lot. And then between the volume and tone settings on your guitar or bass and on the amp itself too, you can do just a lot, like even without throwing too many pedals and things at it at the same time. Yeah. Not to take away from Jeff's business, but you can sort of you can lock in a lot of stuff and complement it with a Kentucky Hot Brown or a Overdrive or a Vibe or something with it too, if you need a little bit more. That's my technique. I have no idea if it's right. Fuck if I know.
My headset's about to go dead.
Okay. All right. Well, this was a good conversation. Jeff, you're going to have to come back and talk to us more, especially when you have our prototype of our All Things Blues and Southern Rock pedal.
I'll get to work on that. Yeah.
The blues setting and the Southern Rock setting. Where do we send our listeners to go to find out more about you, your pedals, order stuff?
Analogpedals.com. You can email me at jeff@analogpedals.com. But, you know, go to the website, look around, shoot me a message if you have any ideas for anything unique or that's, you know, not on the site. Shoot me a message.
And I think you're on Instagram, correct?
I am. I'm on Instagram. I'm on TikTok. I'm on Facebook.
He's on TikTok, Brian. He's on TikTok. We're going to have to get on TikTok one of these days.
We're not there yet, but maybe so. Not
there. Well, thanks for joining us, man. It was a great conversation. We look forward to talking to you more. Over to you, Brian.
All right. Thank you so much to Jeff Boland from Analog Pedals for coming on the podcast. We've been wanting to talk to you for a while, and, you know, we're obsessed with Kentucky and, you know, it's one of the areas of the country where there's more stellar musicians clustered in one place than a lot of other places. So that's just love Kentucky. So thanks for coming on, man.
It's my pleasure. Thank you all so much for having me.
Thank you so much to Jeff Boland for joining us. We wanted to get him on for a while, and it sounds like the Kentucky Hot Brown. That's got to be the thing to get.
Yeah, I'm going to take a look at it. I had the website up before we were interviewing in a while just to kind of follow along, and I'm looking at the Kentucky Hot Brown. And Brian, you know, I've been playing guitar a long while. I've had pedals, I've had boards, all that. I've never really been curious enough to ask how and why these things are put together and what makes them that. And between the questions that you and I had, and Jeff was nice enough to answer, I got a little bit better understanding about pedals now.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had to just try to take it in layman terms, you know, when he's talking about capacitors and diodes and stuff, and I'm just like...
I understand a little bit of that stuff, Jeff could really a little bit, but not, you know.
Jeff could have told me that magic elves are running those pedals, and I believe it.
I thought magic elves actually ran those, and I was very surprised there's actually electronic components in them.
Yeah. You know... It was great to hear about like the technical aspects of, you know, he's talking about the SG, like use the neck pickup, roll the tone off.
Yeah. And what effects to go with it for that. Yeah.
And I'm playing the neck pickup on my SG. To me, that sounds the best. I haven't rolled the tone off yet, but I got to try to
do that. It has definitely a warmer, brassier sound, I call it a little bit. But when you roll the tone off of it, so if you roll the tone all the way down, it's like, I called it flat or underwater. He probably had a better next buttery sound, especially if you have a really good neck pickup. It's got that, if you roll the tone off of something completely, it definitely gives it any guitar a different sound.
Yeah. You're talking about a scrambler pedal. So now it's got
which it sounds like that was an octave increase, like, you know, set something right. up one octave. Yep. So that's a real interesting set. And I almost wonder if Chris, I didn't ask that, we should have.
Mm-hmm.
When does he use that? Is he using that just for if he's soloing, or is he using that like actively through a song?
Yeah, next time we have him on, we're going to have to find out all about
that. Going to have to ask him about that. When he's done Pokemon hunting, he can talk to him about where to use this as a Dose Fuzz pedal. But Brian, I tell you what, I would love to see an All Things Blues and Southern Rock pedal, dual pedal, blues sound, Southern Rock sound. That would be super cool.
I'm about ready to go get a Tube Screamer and a Blues Driver.
There, I used to have a Blues Driver.
How was that?
It was good. It was once I switched to my flywheel and a couple other things, it was sort of irrelevant. So I actually sold it because it's a good pedal. But yeah, it was good when I was using it when I was making a little bit of my own pedal board. Now, yeah, Tube Screamer, Ibanez Tube Screamer, they're great, but they're like $200. They're pretty expensive.
Yeah. Well, I know I listened to sound demos, but I think sometimes like on the internet, it's hard to distinguish, you know, like it when you see someone like demoing a guitar or whatever, and oh, here's where the tone rolled off here. And you can't really, if you're not there in front of it, can't really hear it. But I said, the Blues Driver sounded like I had a real subtle kind of, you know,
Blues Driver's definitely a little bit subtle. Yeah. It's a little bit, it's a good for that blues sound. If you want the rock sound, the Tube Screamer is the way to go. And we should have a pedal with each one on there, Brian.
You think listeners would get bored if like you gave me guitar lessons for one episode?
No, we can do that. We can sit there.
I don't know. I don't think so.
All things we can do. I will say though, the best thing to do in lessons is just go on YouTube and find practice drills just for running up and down the neck and practicing scales. And
you I found a great app. I can't think of the name of it right here, but there's
a million of them.
Great, yeah. You know.
So. Gibson and Fender both have apps with Fender kind Play, of tutorials yeah. on yeah. there, all sorts of stuff. But it is way easier to learn to play.
I think so. Yeah, because I've kind of like thought about, you know, and I sent out some messages to some folks, you know, about possibly taking lessons over Zoom, and but I think this is the way to go.
Fretting the strings, man, and fretting them cleanly, and picking. Alternate picking, so down up as you're fretting, and like you get that down, dude, it's all gravy after that.
Yeah So well, we got to thank Jeff again for coming on. That's our guest, and we're kind of getting meandering off on our own things, which is fine, but yeah. No, great guy. I'm so glad that he came on and to learn about his pedals and learn about how they're made. So as you learn more about that, always remember, Southern Rock is reverent, blues is blood. We'll see you next time.
It's been a long time.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.